Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Branching Out. My name is David Lopez, and I'm joined today with Thousand Oaks Acorn editor Becca Whitnall. Becca?
Hi, David. Hello, everybody.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Hanging in there.
Did you have a good day in court?
I had a frustrating day.
And
I did.
Let that kind of serve as the backdrop to this episode, because we are talking about something that has frustrated a lot of people, as it's been going on for 5 years now. And so give our listeners a little more context of what I'm talking about.
Sure. Today we'll be talking about a case I've been following for a long time. 5 years, like you said, I think it's pretty much the longest one. It's the longest one I've ever covered. I think it's the longest one, at least in recent Acorn history, last 10 years or so that I remember. So this is the Brent Spacher case on Memorial Day in 2018. Brynn and her friend or boyfriend, depending on who you ask, got together at his house. His name is Chad O'Melia. And it was about, I want to say, 10:30 at night. She came over. She'd been out with friends during the day. And they were just hanging out. According to Chad's roommate, they hanging out on the couch, watching TV. He spent some time with them. Chad, and this comes from the testimony of the preliminary hearing, Chad stepped outside to take a hit of marijuana from a bong, and Brynn decided she wanted to too, is what the officer said she told them. Mm-hmm. They did that. I guess she wasn't feeling the effects, allegedly. And so they took another hit, and she started feeling not so great. At some point, she was laying down. I guess, she was in the bathroom. He was bringing her water, all according to testimony. And then she started feeling like she was dying. She had images, she told the police, that she was dying. And at some point, again, she started hearing voices that basically told her for her to feel better or to not die, she had to hurt Chad and keep hurting him to make herself okay. The roommate, who by then had gone upstairs, heard tumbling around. He figured they were wrestling or, something normal-ish, until he heard, "Get off me." And the noises kept going, so he started coming downstairs from the condo. It was a two-story condo, so the bedrooms were upstairs. And he starts coming downstairs and finds both his roommate's dog and Brynn's dog kind of at the middle landing, kind of cowering. So he keeps going downstairs, and he saw Brynn with a knife in her hand, Chad there bleeding. The couch overturned, furniture overturned, blood everywhere. Ultimately, Chad would die. And the medical examiner said there were 108 stab wounds with multiple knives, at least two. One of those he thought was a serrated blade. And in fact, one of the officers who came and testified at the preliminary hearing said when he walked in, she was holding like a bread knife, a rounded tip and serrated edge.
And Becca,
I'm probably jumping around there, sorry.
No, but I appreciate you jumping in and giving the background of this case. Of course, it's one that we've all heard for 5 years now, and we keep hitting that five-year point. But so you interviewed one of their neighbors at one point, and they said to me a quote that really stuck with me as I was going back and doing background and reading all of your stories on this. And she said, "These weren't young kids. They had careers. This was a doctor and an accountant." And that quote came from Sherry Sanders, who was a neighbor in that community.
Shari, actually, but yeah.
Shari. Thank you.
No, that's okay.
But it's an interesting quote, because I feel like throughout these 5 years, your reporting, you've been able to introduce us to different people within this case. And as you mentioned earlier, now we have a chance to learn more about Chad through your reporting and discussion with his father. So talk a little bit about kind of what readers can expect to get out of that piece on that's coming out this Friday.
Yeah, this Friday. I had the chance to talk with Bryn's mom about the same time as I talked with the roommate last year. And from the very beginning, we had reached out to Chad's dad and mom, who has since passed, to learn a little bit more. One of the things I hate when writing about a death is that what we get from the police is name, city of residence, and age. And then from the medical examiner, we'll get cause of death. And one of the things I hate is stopping there. I want to tell someone's story because everyone has one. And especially in a case like this where someone is killed, you want to tell more, but there really wasn't more to find. So at the very beginning, I approached Mr. Amelia, and he didn't want to talk at the time. I understand. And I'm not one of those journalists that's going to badger someone to talk, especially in a case, you know, in these circumstances. And he kind of put it off. You know, often attorneys will tell their clients on both sides, don't talk to the media because you don't want to taint a jury pool or say something that the other side can twist around sure. or use against you or whatever it is. So he declined very nicely. And then we hit this 5-year mark and something, so you were talking about frustration, Mr. Amelia is very frustrated. He's spoken at multiple now hearings, asking the judge to move this along.
Well, and I remember, sorry to interrupt, but I remember the one that stuck out to me was when it was around Christmas time. And he said, I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but he mentioned this is many Christmases.
Four or three or whatever it was at the time, Christmases we've gone without him.
Yeah.
We want some closure.
Yeah.
You know, it's never going to bring Chad back, but at least they don't have this hanging over their heads. So anyway, last week, I guess by the time this airs, because we're recording on Friday, so it was a week ago today. So by the time it airs a week and a few days ago, I had the opportunity to meet with Sean and his longtime girlfriend, Terry, at the house where Chad grew up, actually. And we sat and chatted about Chad.
What was, and you said there really wasn't much to find out about him that you were able to get.
Yeah, with our online snooping.
Sure.
We knew he was 26. Mm-hmm. We knew he wasn't an accountant. He was working for an accounting firm, working on getting his license.
To be a CPA, I saw.
He had gone to school at Chico State. And, you know, there he served as his fraternity's treasurer and, you know, was able to accomplish. I had heard from a fraternity brother that said really financially he was able to turn their books around. And we talked about why Chad wanted to go into accounting. You know, little kids grow up wanting to be a football star or a fireman. Not everyone says, I want to play with numbers when I get older.
Sure.
So we went through all that. And
And one of the things that stood out to me, just again, going back and doing the background here and seeing pictures of him and photographs of him that we had and the limited that were available to us, he was really, and again, this is just my seeing these photos, but he seemed to really care about how he dressed and how he presented himself.
That's funny. His dad told me that as well.
So I guess, does that line up with what something you heard from his dad?
Yeah, absolutely. He said, in fact, when he started at the firm, and Well, I'll get there. But just to jump in for a second, he, you know, you after you graduate, you kind of trying to find a position in what you studied, or you have a few months there, and Chad did. But he was looking for a position in an accounting firm. And so it got to the point where he reached out to this, to the owner of the firm or the president of the firm, and said, give me a chance. I'll work for you for 2 weeks for free, no pay. And if you like what I've done at the end of the 2 weeks, you know, we can talk about. So I just thought that that kind of showed some go-getter type attitude. But his dad said that Chad enjoyed wearing his suit. He liked looking the part and looking. So he would go in, and I guess at the firm, things were business casual-ish. Maybe not as much as here at the Acorn.
Very casual around here. Yes.
As I'm wearing jeans talking to you.
Me too.
But people started dressing nicer, all the people around. And then eventually, I guess, even the president of the firm said, well, if you guys are all dressing up, I guess I better too.
But what's one thing you learned from the conversation, I guess, with his dad that?
I think what was stressed a lot is family and how important family is in the Amelia family. The Amelias are immigrants. Sean, Chad's dad, immigrated when he was young. And when they got here, the only thing they had was family members. They didn't know anyone. They didn't have anything. And it was a theme that just kind of, that was stressed and stressed and stressed through Chad's life, to the point where even to this day, Chad's mom lives with Chad's grandmother, Sean's mom, lives with Sean, and Chad's grandmother's brother lives with Mr. Amelia. I mean, it's that important.
So, Becca, this episode started with me making a joke with you about your day in court, and just share a little bit about what happened on Friday, or today, but on last Friday when you went into court and we pushed this episode back so we could get that into this episode.
Yeah, we pushed recording. David, nothing happened in court. And even more so, I mean, quite often you'll go in and they'll call the case and some talking has been done, obviously, between the attorneys beforehand, because they'll just say, we'd like a continuance, everyone agrees, and that's it. Today, we didn't even get that. I think a judge was sick. Something happened where they had to move. We had a 1:30 hearing, and it's a trial readiness hearing. It got moved to a court. It was up on the fourth floor. It got moved to a courtroom down on the first floor to reschedule. They moved it back up to the fourth floor, and in court, the judge looked around for the attorneys, couldn't find them, asked the bailiff to call the DA on the case. He couldn't reach her, but in the meantime, the judge went in the back and did some judge thing and came back in and said, never mind, it's taken care of. And that was that. So
nothing happened.
Yeah, so I hopped in my car and drove back to Agora Hills. But when I went online, I saw that they just rescheduled it for today, for Monday.
Okay. Talk a little bit about this case. We opened up the episode saying it's been 5 years, and it's one of the longer cases you've ever seen
it's
around
the
here.
The longest one. Yeah.
We just saw over in the Acorn the Anthony Rauta case get wrapped up in sentencing happening there, where he got
119 years to life.
To life. That took 5 years. That was June 2018. We just looked up.
Yeah.
But that case is now wrapped and sentencing is done.
No, it does have a date in July in September for a jury trial, but we've seen dates come and go before. So until they call jurors to be questioned, I'm not going to hold my breath.
The Thousand Oaks Acorn recently ran an editorial saying that it's time for this to start trying to pressure things into movement. Talk a little bit about what this feels like covering and watching this from the sidelines.
It's my job, so I'm going to do it regardless, you know.
Sure.
Come and go and you do it. But it's also heartbreaking just all around. You see Brynn come in, her mom comes in often, her brother, you know, other supporters, and they're there and wondering what's going to happen to their family member. And then, and wondering what happened to their family member that night that this all happened. And then on the other side, you've got a family that no longer is there to hold and to celebrate all the happy, you know, like we talked about, all the holidays and birthdays and, you know, just to call and hear his voice. And no one can get, no one's ever going to get past it, but there's no moving on if you're being called back every other week or once a month. And, you know, it's just really painful to watch them go through it.
Becca, and I keep referencing your reporting of this in the past, but in one of the dates that stood out to me was in January of 2020, they asked for a continuance, and March 17th of 2020 was the date that the case was continued to. Of course, we all know March 14th, the world shut down.
Yeah, and that includes the courthouse.
And so I think when we talk about how long this has taken, it's only fair to mention that there was a global pandemic wedged in the middle of this that has impacted its ability to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's only fair. And even when courts came back, people were wearing masks. And what we haven't talked about is Spacher Brynn is hearing impaired. She's an audiologist, but one of the reasons she went into that field was because she became deaf shortly after birth. And you can't read lips if someone's got their lips covered.
Mm-hmm. Can you share with our listeners a sense of when you felt like the case was ready to move forward?
I kind of thought when the attorneys, when I spoke with them last year, when I spoke with Brynn's mom and Vinny, the roommate, I also spoke with Brynn's attorneys and the district attorney handling the case. And everyone sort of agreed that they were going to go to court. They were ready for trial probably in September of last year.
But September of last year, of course, is come and gone. So, Becca, I think we'll leave it there for now. And I think what I'd encourage readers that are interested in this discussion is to pick up the paper this week, because you're going to have – this might be your last story that you write on this case now that you're an editor.
It's one of those – there are some stories that you follow.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to give up. And it's not that this is a happy case or anything like that. It's an interesting case, and I'm so, you know, now familiar with it that I'm sure I'll be hopping in from time to time once it actually goes to court.
Sure.
But yeah, now I have different time constraints, so likely Vicki Talbot will be doing the covering. But we'll see.
So
as we progress.
So, but pick up that paper. What do you think readers will get a sense of as they read that story on Friday? Just one last tease before
Hopefully
we go.
Hopefully they'll get a sense of who Chad was, you know, his childhood growing up. And then Chad's dad went into a little bit, and you and I were talking, and I told him, I don't want to make you relive that day, but how does a parent move on from that? What does the next day look like? Because I can't imagine it, and I'm not even a parent. Imagine that's a harder thing even to think about as a parent. And so we talked a little bit about that, but he also went through the day that officers showed up at his doorstep. So we'll probably talk a little bit about that in the article too.
All right, Becca. Well, thank you so much for your time and coming on Branching Out. I've appreciated chatting with you, and look forward to seeing your article this week.
Thanks for having me, and always a pleasure.